Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Saturday, June 20th, 2026, and this is episode number 432. We are going to be unpacking the biggest stories that hit the front page yesterday, June 19th. We have got a really fascinating mix today. We are looking at Hyundai taking full control of Boston Dynamics, a massive update coming to Java that has been a decade in the making, Norway cracking down on AI in elementary schools, some corporate drama between Google Workspace and Firefox, and finally, an AI engineer who claims to have solved one of history's greatest linguistic mysteries, Linear A.
It is a packed show, so let us jump right into our first story, which racked up over 700 points. The headline reads, Hyundai buys Boston Dynamics. Now, if you are a regular listener or just follow tech news, you might be thinking, wait, did not Hyundai already buy Boston Dynamics years ago? And you would be right.
Exactly. A lot of the Hacker News comments immediately pointed this out. Back in 2020, Hyundai bought an 80% controlling stake from SoftBank for about $880 million. What happened yesterday is just SoftBank exercising a put option to sell their remaining 9.65% stake for $325 million. So Hyundai now owns it outright. But what's really interesting here is the timing and the strategic shift for both companies.
Right. For SoftBank, Masayoshi Son is basically clearing the decks of hardware robotics to go all in on AI infrastructure. They are building a new venture called Rose AI, aiming for a $100 billion valuation, focused on data centers, energy, and land. It's the infrastructure layer of AI. Meanwhile, Hyundai is taking Boston Dynamics from a company famous for viral YouTube dance videos to a company putting robots on the factory floor. They are deploying the new electric Atlas humanoid robot to their electric vehicle plant in Georgia by 2028.
The discussion on Hacker News really dug into the utility of humanoid robots. One commenter mentioned that AI currently has limited usefulness for them outside of work, but they would gladly pay the price of a new car for a household robot that could fold laundry, do dishes, and clean. That sparked a huge debate about general-purpose robots versus single-purpose robots.
Yeah, someone pointed out that we already have robot lawnmowers and Roombas that work perfectly fine without needing to be shaped like a human. Why build a crude, inefficient facsimile of a human to push a lawnmower? But another commenter made a great counterpoint comparing it to smartphones. We used to have separate cameras, GPS devices, and MP3 players. The smartphone absorbed all of them because a general-purpose machine is ultimately more convenient. If Atlas can prove itself in a highly controlled environment like a Hyundai car factory, doing part sequencing and heavy lifting, that's the first step toward that general-purpose future.
Moving from the physical world to the virtual, our next story is a deep dive into the Java ecosystem. Project Valhalla is finally arriving in JDK 28. This post got over 550 points, and it's a fascinating look at technical debt and language design. Project Valhalla has been in the works for over a decade. James Gosling once called it 6 PhDs tied into a single knot.
That is such a great description. The core problem Valhalla solves is memory layout. In Java, everything except the basic primitives like integers or booleans is a reference type. So if you have an array of a million point objects, you do not have a dense block of data. You have a million pointers pointing to a million different locations scattered across the heap memory. Each of those objects has a header, it needs to be garbage collected, and most importantly, it ruins your cache locality.
Right, because modern CPUs are incredibly fast, but memory is relatively slow. CPUs read memory in chunks called cache lines. If your data is packed densely, the CPU grabs a whole bunch of useful data at once. If you are chasing pointers all over the heap, you get cache misses, which completely tank your performance. Valhalla introduces value classes, which the developers summarize perfectly as codes like a class, works like an int. You get the safety, methods, and readability of a class, but the JVM flattens it in memory like a primitive.
The Hacker News comments were incredibly divided on this, which is classic for any programming language dread. Some people were frustrated by how long this has taken and how complex the implementation is compared to C# and .NET, which had value types, or structs, from the very beginning.
Yeah, one commenter said the stewardship of Java seems lacking compared to Microsoft making the right decisions early on with .NET. But what I loved about this thread is that an actual member of the Java language team chimed in. They pointed out that language design is entirely about trade-offs, and opinions are rarely universal, even among experts. They noted that when designing virtual threats for Java, they explicitly looked at what .NET did with async 08 and decided they absolutely did not want to go down that path.
it really highlights how these massive languages evolve. Java chose a path of extreme backwards compatibility, which means features like this take a decade to get right. But when they ship, they do not break the millions of enterprise apps already running.
It is a monumental engineering achievement, even if it is just shipping as a preview feature for now. Let us pivot to our third story, which takes us to Europe. Norway is imposing a near ban on AI in elementary schools. Students under 13 will generally not be allowed to use AI, while 14 to 16-year-olds can use it cautiously under teacher supervision. This got 520 points and sparked a massive debate about education and technology.
Context is important here. Norway has been seeing a broad decline in education test scores, and just last year in 2024, they banned smartphones from schools entirely. So this AI ban is part of a larger pushback against screens and tech in the classroom. A lot of Hacker News users were completely on board with this. One person said kids under 13 need to learn to read, write, and comprehend text, and generative AI is not going to help them with those foundational skills.
But then the debate got really philosophical. One commenter took a hardline stance, saying they would ban all technology in the classroom, going back to chalk, chalkboards, pencils, and paper. Their argument was that you will never get strong by watching a video of someone lifting weights, and you will never understand math by having an AI do the work for you. You have to struggle through it to learn it.
I thought the pushback to that comment was really insightful. Someone argued that AI is simultaneously the best technology ever invented for avoiding learning and the best technology ever invented for learning. If a teacher assigns a take-home essay, yes, the student will just have ChatGPT write it and learn nothing. But on the flip side, if you use AI as an interactive tutor, it can sit there and patiently answer your endless questions until a complex topic finally clicks.
Exactly. A user mentioned they never understood the P versus NP problem in computer science until they sat down with an AI and just kept asking for clarification on the parts they were confused about. The real challenge is that our current curriculum is built around testing the output, like an essay or a math worksheet. If AI can generate the output instantly, the school system has to figure out how to evaluate the actual learning process instead. Banning it for young kids makes sense while they build basic neural pathways, but eventually the education system has to adapt because the cat is completely out of the bag.
Speaking of adapting to technology, our fourth story is a bit of corporate drama that hit close to home for a lot of developers. A blog post titled "Google Workspace Threatening to Block Firefox Access" got 455 points. The author, who is a Workspace admin, logged in using Firefox and got a warning prompt telling them to download Chrome to keep their data secure.
The author reached out to Google support, and the response they got was basically boilerplate text saying Chrome is fully supported, while Firefox is supported but lacks certain features like offline access and client-side encryption in Google Meet. But the warning itself felt very aggressive, telling the user their device did not meet security requirements just because they were using Firefox.
The Hacker News comments provided a lot of clarity here, though. Several users who work in IT and corporate security pointed out that this is not a global Google conspiracy to kill Firefox. It is a specific Google Workspace feature called context-aware access. Basically, corporate IT departments can flip a switch to enforce certain security policies, and Chrome has deeper hooks into Google's management infrastructure to verify device compliance.
That is true, but it did not stop the comments from erupting into a huge debate about browser monopolies and misaligned incentives. One IT admin explained that they nudge users toward Chrome because their data loss prevention tools and observability software only work with Chrome. Supporting multiple browsers takes engineering resources they just don't have.
But the users pushed back hard on that. One person pointed out that Google has been kneecapping ad blockers in Chrome with the Manifest V3 rollout. Since malicious ads are one of the primary vectors for malware and phishing, forcing employees to use a browser with weaker ad blocking in the name of security is incredibly ironic. It is that classic tension between corporate IT wanting a standardized, easily managed environment and power users wanting the freedom to use the tools they trust. It feels like we are inching back toward the dark days of the Internet Explorer 6 monopoly, where enterprise apps only worked in one specific browser.
It is definitely a trend worth watching. All right, let's wrap up today with a story straight out of an Indiana Jones movie. An AI engineer claims to have cracked Linear A. This post got over 400 points, and it is absolutely fascinating. For some background, Linear A is an ancient Minoan vasing system used on the island of Crete around 1800 to 1450 BC. It has been completely undeciphered for over a century.
Right. Its sister script, Linear B, was deciphered in 1952 and turned out to be an early form of Greek. Because the two scripts share about 60 symbols, linguists know what Linear A sounds like, they just have no idea what the words actually mean. Enter Tom Domino, a self-taught AI engineer and amateur linguist. He used Claude Code to build a suite of Python scripts to systematically query and cross-reference the entire digitized database of Linear A artifacts.
His major breakthrough came while analyzing a specific prayer inscription called the libation formula. By looking at the patterns and using a previously unknown symbol, he hypothesized that the root verb meant to dwell. He then mapped this to an extinct Semitic language, a precursor to Biblical Hebrew. According to his research, the Minoan prayers strongly resemble later Hebrew prayers addressed to a goddess. He has now proposed translations for 408 Linear A terms.
As you can imagine, the Hacker News crowd was highly skeptical. Linguistics is a field notorious for amateurs claiming they have crocked ancient codes using dubious pattern matching. One commenter pointed out that the corpus of Linear A is so incredibly fragmented, mostly just short inventory lists, that you cannot even be sure it is all the same language. They also argued that if the pre-Greek population of Crete was Semitic, there should be way more Semitic loanwords in ancient Greek than we currently see.
The skepticism is totally warranted, but what made this thread amazing is that Tom Domino himself actually showed up in the comments. He was on vacation in Washington State, but jumped in to engage with the critics. He noted that his work is currently being formally reviewed by linguistics experts at Rutgers and Cambridge. The author of the blog post also chimed in to defend him, pointing out that Tom's approach actually solves some lingering translation problems in Linear B, which is a strong validation of his model.
Whether he is entirely right or not, it is an incredible example of how AI coding assistants are empowering solo researchers to do data analysis at a scale that used to require a whole team of graduate students. He essentially built a custom search and hypothesis testing engine for ancient Cree tablets. We will definitely be keeping an eye on the peer review process for his manuscript.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. From humanoid robots building cars to AI translating Bronze Age languages, it was a wild day on Hacker News.
It really was. Thanks so much for tuning in to HNPod. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend or a coworker. We will be back tomorrow to break down the next batch of top stories. Until then, keep building and keep hacking.